Welcome to Ask Peggy About Your Finances, because prosperity is so much more than money. Brought to you by writer, speaker, and certified financial planner, Peggy Dowiak.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. My name is Peggy Dowiak, and I'm a certified financial planner practitioner and a personal finance author. This is a show to help you understand your money, and I've got some great topics today. We're going to look at how inflation data is cooling and what that might mean to the Federal Reserve. We're going to look at some Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals and SEC battles that are going on over consumer protection issues. I'm going to talk about how investing is like fireworks, and then I'm going to get into some of the weeds about required minimum distributions and when you need to take your money. So let's get started with the bulls and bears market and economic update, and this is for the week ending June 21st. I am taping this on June 24th, but this is data for last week that ended on Friday. And it was another good week in the market. The Dow was up 1.45%. The S&P 500 was up about 0.6%. And the NASDAQ was absolutely flat to 2 decimal places. The NASDAQ moved 0.00 last week. Gold was up about 0.6%. And oil, West Texas Intermediate Crude front month price, was up 2.68%. And that current price per barrel is $80.73. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.9%. Went up 2.9%, and it's currently at 4.257%. The dollar index went up just a little less than 0.3%, and Bitcoin dropped 3.81%. So several things. One, I cannot believe that June is almost over and that July is almost upon us so that I can be talking about fireworks. We're nearly at the end of another quarter, and next week I will be bringing you second quarter and year-to-date numbers rather than just simply the weekly data. But things have been going remarkably well. And on the inflation front, the numbers are cooling noticeably. Now, the Federal Reserve's favorite inflation measurement is the personal consumption expenditures. That is the PCE index. It's not the one we normally talk about, which is CPI, the consumer price index. The Fed's favorite measure is the personal consumption expenditure price index. And there was no change at all expected in May. And in the CPI, they're only expecting 0.1% increase. So inflation data and inflation increasing has really come to an end, okay? Inflation numbers aren't worse than they were a year ago. In fact, they're a lot better, and they've been a lot better for a long time. What messes with people is that the prices haven't dipped. Remember that inflation is just how much year over year prices go up. And unfortunately, with what we had a couple of years ago, we're still paying some higher prices for things, even though we are back to what you would expect inflation to be. And quite frankly, other than extraordinary items that went up or down in an unexpected manner, from something like a bird flu, for example, causing a scarcity of chickens and eggs, leading to an increase in the price of chickens and eggs, then we really have inflation back about as good as we can get it. And with the employment numbers still looking really strong, there is a very high probability that the Fed will cut interest rates at least once this year. Now, I know back in January, people were calling for 6 cuts. I never was, and not because I'm patting myself on the back. I just thought that that was overly exuberant thinking. And why would the Fed bring the rate down to a number that's quite frankly artificially low just because it could do it? So now they're thinking there may be one rate cut this year in September. If the Fed really wanted to goose the economy, they would do two, since they're indicating that they're going to do one. We don't know. Certainly something could happen. Inflation could heat back up again and cause the September cut not to happen. There's no expectation that they will cut ahead of September, but they are strongly indicating that they probably will cut in September. Now, I was tracking some bond market prices this week for a different reason, but I was also curious how the data was impacting it. I like to look at a chart, and you can look at a chart of a 10-year Treasury yield. I was looking at an aggregate bond fund chart, and I really do think that looking at the chart over the last 2 or 3 years, we might see those bond funds go up in value when we have the interest rate cut. Now, that's not a prediction, and I am not suggesting you go out and buy bond funds, but I am saying that for the first time in a really long time, I am personally liking bond funds a lot better, because when the yields were so very low and the only direction for yields to go realistically was up, that was going to do bad things to the bond fund prices. And in fact, when it happened so unexpectedly and so rapidly, bond funds actually dropped a little bit more than stock funds did. So there was no surprise that was going to happen. But now that the interest rates are higher and the bond funds don't appear to be getting ahead of their skis in what they're pricing at, maybe a good year, maybe a good end of the year. We'll just have to wait and see. We'll have to see what the Fed does. We'll have to see what other issues come up and how they impact things. And I will certainly keep you in the loop as I notice different situations.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the legislative update of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And it's the summer and things are moving a little bit more slowly, but there was something that happened that reminded me of something that I tend to give you guys as advice often, but it was worth repeating. So the SEC has been taking a lot of actions to try to help protect consumers recently. And I am a big fan of this. If you've listened to the show for a long time, you know that I am all about consumer protection. I'm all about holding financial services to account. And I'm all about making sure that investors actually understand what they own. But the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals was upset with the way the Securities and Exchange Commission's major rulemaking statutes have been being implemented. And I don't want to get incredibly far into the weeds in this because I think that it will just kind of make your head explode. This is radio and I don't have a PowerPoint, but what they were doing is saying that the SEC overstepped its bounds when it was dealing with how private funds were regulated and when dealing with consumer protection related to private funds. And basically what the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals was saying is that general public things, yes, the SEC can make rules about, but making rules about a private fund, because the goal of a private fund is not supposed to be for the rank and file investor, that what the SEC was requiring was too strict and it bound the hands of the financial service companies too much and it's unfair. Now, where this becomes concerning is some of the precedents that the SEC was using were also central to some of the other rules that they've been putting forward recently. So what I don't know is how this is going to impact some of the rules that the SEC has put out there. you know, some of the things. I basically give you a blow by blow because one of the things that I like to do is help you understand the rules around what financial companies have to do and what they don't have to do. Well, probably most of you are not in private funds. I get a little nervous because I've seen private funds sold in ways that aren't exactly the way they're supposed to be sold. So this is where we're going to get back to the advice. I'm not supposed to give advice on the show. Recommendations. Okay, strong suggestions that I might have related to you and your money and your investments. You've really got to understand what you own. If somebody recommends something to you, if your investment professional recommends an investment to you, it's up to you to make sure that you understand it. And this can get really tricky sometimes because there was an old saying that came out in politics a bunch of years ago that people didn't know what they didn't know. And I think that's an incredibly true statement related to financial services. You might not know what questions to ask. So some general questions you might consider asking is getting a detailed understanding of what an investment product owns. Okay, what are you buying? Are you buying stocks? Are you buying bonds? Are you buying option contracts? Are you buying futures? Are you buying forwards? What do you own? Okay, and why is it, if it doesn't trade on the public market, why doesn't it trade on the public market? And you need to ask your financial professional that question. Okay, this is a private investment. And you know, the answer isn't, well, because you're special and I think this is great for you. Okay, the reason it doesn't trade on a public market is for a reason. Maybe it can't actually get through the scrutiny that's required of publicly traded securities. Maybe it's too new. Maybe it has too much debt. You know, it's actually really hard to become a stock that exchanges, that trades on the stock exchange. And so why isn't this fund public? What are the risks associated both with the underlying investments and the fund itself? So you have not only what something is invested in, but you might have risks associated with the wrapper. Maybe the mutual fund company is new. Maybe the mutual fund company has a very leveraged portfolio, which means they use a lot of debt to finance what they're doing. So you need to understand the risks of what's inside your mutual fund, as well as risks of the mutual fund itself. You need to know why this investment is better than any other investment, especially any other publicly traded investment for your portfolio. Remember, high yields mean you're taking more risk. So if the reason this is better for your portfolio is it pays a really high yield, that's worth a question as to why. It works just like your credit score and when you want to go buy a car. The better your credit score, the lower the interest rate you have to pay because you're a good risk. The worse your credit score, the more interest you're going to have to pay. Well, this is in reverse because they're the ones having to pay you, not you having to pay a car company. So if they're paying an extraordinarily high yield, you want to ask why. If they have returns that seem really too good to be true, you might want to watch it for a while. You know, there's nothing wrong with putting something on a watch list and considering it and then deciding later whether or not it works. You have specific goals for your portfolio, and maybe some of these less regulated investments are exactly what your portfolio needs. I am not in a position to answer that question. What I would suggest is your financial professional is in the position to answer that question. And you want to make sure that you understand the investment. You want to make sure that they understand the investment and that this is something that's going to help you prosper and reach your long-term goals.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Plan Your Prosperity segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And like I said in the introduction, I can't believe that next week is the 4th of July. And because I tape and then you listen to the show later, I wanted to talk about the 4th of July and fireworks and investing and what they all have to do with each other. I have to admit, I am a big 4th of July fan. I'm kind of a fan of some of the second tier holidays. You know, everybody loves Christmas, everybody loves Halloween, and I certainly do too. But I really love Thanksgiving, I really love Easter, and I really love the 4th of July. And I like them all because they're a little bit easier going, and there's not quite so many expectations, and you just get together with the people you love and you eat food. My favorite two things to do. But I want to talk today about how the 4th of July fireworks can be like investments. And we've all seen the hot stocks that are in the news these days. Now, because I don't want anyone to think I'm recommending something, I'm not going to name any specific company. But there are several companies, and they certainly do appear to be going off like gangbusters, making tons of money for the people that own them. I am always a bit leery of the brightest shining positions that are out there. For one thing, I am old enough to remember Commodore computers. If you are too young to remember Commodore computers in the very late 70s and the early 1980s, if you had a Commodore computer, you were just cool. And you were state of the art, and Commodore really had a hold of the market. And you probably bought your Commodore computer at Radio Shack, which, if you like electronics and gadgets like I always have, is just a plethora of cool electronic gizmos and gadgets that you probably don't need. But Radio Shack had everything. It wasn't very many years later, however, before some other names entered the personal computing space, names like Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, and they pushed Commodore computers completely out of the market. And at the time, it was like, wow, that's just amazing. And then when I started working in the stock market, a phrase that I would hear sometimes, especially when somebody was the brand new whiz kid on the block, first to market is not necessarily best to market. So the advice that I am going to give you today, and again, I use that advice word, the recommendations I'm going to give you today is I don't want you to treat your investment portfolio like it's a fireworks display. There is nothing better than watching fireworks go off. Somebody, not me, shoots them off. They zoom up in the air. Maybe you can see that little white trail going up, and then boom, and they're bright colored and they're dazzling and everybody oohs and ahs. But if you wait just a little bit, they begin to dissipate. They begin to disappear. And then by the end of the show, all you have is a little bit of smoke in the air from all those bright shining things. And then by the next morning, even that smoke is gone, and maybe there's a little bit of rubble in the grass. Now, I'm not guaranteeing that all of the high-flying things that are out there right now are going to explode, be huge, and then go away. I don't know that. I can't know that. What I do know is many, many times the bigger the name, the brighter the explosion, and especially when they really come out of nowhere, they will tend not to last. So, what am I saying? Remember, I'm not giving advice. I'm saying that if you want to buy one of these high-flying, flashy items, I certainly would not tell you to do it. I wouldn't even tell you not to do it if you and I knew each other. Okay, what I would tell you is where people really make a mistake is they overload their investment portfolio with the flashy things. Because, oh, well, look, it made a huge rate of return last year. Yeah, and it's really super cool. And it's really neat. And man, I can't believe they did that. But if you're old enough to remember Commodore, and if you're not old enough to remember Commodore, if you remember the dot-com crash in 2000, where the internet just came out of nowhere and it was going to change our lives and these companies were going to change everything and needing earnings was outdated because everything was forward-looking. Well, come to find out, earnings were actually a big deal. And many people lost a lot of money in companies that just went away. And the problem is they got too hyped. People owned too much of it so that it wasn't just a little bit in a portfolio to try to make a little extra boost. It ended up being most of the portfolio or all of the portfolio. And then when it collapsed, it was an absolute crisis. So load your portfolio up at your appropriate risk tolerance level with more boring items. Then, if you want to buy something that's flashy, take a little bit of money and buy it with that. That's actually called core satellite portfolio construction. The core of the portfolio is boring, and the satellites are the high flyers where people are trying to make quite a bit of money. And of course, if you know what a satellite looks like compared to the Earth, gives you an idea that the satellite positions are small, the core positions are large. Those core boring positions, even if the market goes down, if there's some sort of a market disruption, they are most likely to come back over time. Those little satellite positions can just go away and leave you in a bad situation. It was kind of what happened to my mom in 2000 when her stockbroker put her in what I would call all satellites, all high tech, all internet based. Half of them went bankrupt. She lost about half of her portfolio value in things that disappeared. It's very hard to recover from that. So what you want to do potentially instead after talking with your financial team is if you want to buy something that's really flashy and really high flying, make it be the satellite piece, not the core piece, because nobody really should have a portfolio constructed out of fireworks.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Ask Peggy segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. Remember, if you would like to submit a question to the show, go to askpeggy.com. That's askpeggy.com. And I've recently done a refresh of the website, so you might want to check that out. And you can follow my blog. You can listen to this show. You can keep up with the books that are coming out. It's really kind of a fun place to see everything about what it is that I'm doing. So askpeggy.com, click on the link and send me a question. What I'd like to answer today is a question that I get asked often. And by often, I'm going to say I get asked this question probably at least once a month. And the questions happened a lot more since they began to change the rules. The question is, Peggy, when do I need to start taking required minimum distributions? And forever and ever, it was 70 and a half. You waited until you were 70 and a half, and then you started taking your RMDs, and you could roll it by 6 months if you wanted. But it had been the same rule just for as long as I'd been in financial services. And then they changed it, and it's become a bit of a moving target. So this year, for people who turned 72 in 2023, so this came out late in the year in 2023, and if you turned 72 last year, then you have to take your required minimum distribution on the money that you earned when you were 73. So it's not 70 and a half anymore. If you haven't started taking distributions yet, your age is 73. There is a way you can push it forward by 4 more months, but then you have to take 2 distributions in the same year, and I just think it's a lot easier if you don't do that. The amount of the required minimum distribution on the money that you earned is based off of your account balance as of December 31st, the year before you're taking the distribution. So you look back at your December statement, you get your end of year balance, and then if you actually want to do it, there's an IRS table with a divisor, and you divide your account balance by the divisor, and that tells you how much RMD you have to take. Or if you're like most people and work with most custodians, on your statement somewhere, it will tell you how much RMD you have to take. So that works very well also. Now, I keep saying if it's money you earned, because inherited IRAs are a mess. They've always been a little bit different, but now they're really different. And they're so confusing that the IRS hasn't started imposing penalties yet for people who aren't doing it. If you inherit something and it's not your spouse that you inherited it from, you have 10 years to empty the account. It appears that you still have to take the RMD amount each year, so you can't put the whole thing off and take it in year 10. So you take the RMD amount each year, and then by the end of 10 years, the account has to be emptied. If you're using the RMD amount, at some point you're going to have to take more than that, because that amount won't empty the account in 10 years. So think about your cash flow. Think about when money is coming in. Think about what your taxes are going to be. And that might help guide you as you work with your financial team. It is really important to get your financial advisor and your tax person involved as you try to sort this out, because it's a real mess, and even the IRS isn't completely sure how to handle it, because they don't mind imposing penalties at all. But they're not imposing penalties yet because they're trying to give people a chance to actually get this right. Now, if the person you inherited the account from was your spouse, or if it's someone whose date of birth is very similar to yours, so in other words, it's not a generational thing, sometimes you can take it for your full life expectancy. Again, I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but I want you to talk to your financial team and make sure that you're doing everything correctly. Because with the spouse, you can treat it like it was your IRA and just move on down the road and everything is fine. If it's like a sibling, sometimes you can do that. If the beneficiary is special needs, sometimes you can do that. But it gets very confusing very quickly. For most folks, it's 10 years, but you need to make sure that there isn't some kind of an exception that would apply to you. So your money is 73. Anything you've inherited from not your spouse is likely 10 years. I will be announcing soon when pre-sales for my new mystery, You Can't Cheat Death, will be available. I'll let you know about it.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
You may submit personal finance questions to the Ask Peggy Facebook page and learn more at PeggyDoviak.com. And remember, prosperity is so much more than money.